This is James Turner, contributing editor to O'Reilly Online. With me today is Brian Aker, director of technology for MySQL. Brian is the author of Running Weblogs with Slash. He's also leading a tutorial at O'Reilly's Open Source Convention, July 21st to 25th in Portland, Oregon, titled Memcached and MySQL, Everything You Need to Know. Good day, Brian.
Good day.
Why don't you start with a little bit of a history of where you got to where you are today?
Let's see, where did I get? Do we go back as far as Commodore 64s or before that, or you want to talk more about when I first started working on MySQL?
You can take it from there, I think would be good.
Okay, so the story goes like this. We used to work on a project a very long time ago called the Virtual Hospital. You may remember that from early Webbies. And at the time, we were running one of the projects we were running needed a database. And at the time, we had didn't really have any other licenses or any other databases for the project. So what I had done was I had went out in the net and said, okay, can we go find a database? And the only database we could find that would really work, we thought maybe for free, was this thing called MiniSQL. It was written by David Hughes, and he's an Australian. So we wrote the application around MiniSQL, and it promptly blew up within about 2 months, if it lasted that long. It turns out that the database really couldn't handle anywhere near the sort of data that we had inserted into it. So at that point, I went hunting around, and I found MySQL. It took about 30 minutes to port to MySQL at the time, and then I think it took all 3 or 4 days before I found any bugs. And then I just kind of started fixing stuff and started, exchanging email back and forth on the mailing list. And from there on, I pretty much have been either hacking or working on MySQL or working with it or something for the last 10 years.
What would you say your major contributions have been into the MySQL chain?
Well, let's see, my major contributions around it have generally been in the additions of storage engines and of ideas of how to... early on, we had this concept of we'll have different storage engines, and that comes back from the previous version of MySQL, which was a database called Unireg. And what I wanted to do, and what kind of the agreement was for when David Axmark talked me into coming to MySQL, was I wanted to make that a loadable design. So what I did is I and a number of other people, Anthony Curtis, Sergey Golubchik, pretty much started working on, let's try to make this thing an actual interface that has a design that would allow us to dynamically load engines. Now, I would say we're at the first generation of that at this point, but that was kind of one of the major contributions that I wanted to do, was the idea of bringing on features into MySQL in a modular and kind of online fashion.
There was some controversy when Sun acquired MySQL because some of the engines, there was some question about whether they would be able to be carried over in a Sun acquisition. Has there been any issues there?
No. There's been no issues around engines or anything like that. Today, pretty much, the market for engines is there's several that MySQL maintains. There's one that Oracle maintains. IBM has one. There's PBXT. I think they're now up to a couple employees working on that. So no, the market for engines are, still looks to be pretty steady.
So what has been happening lately with MySQL that makes you excited?
A lot of what I've seen that gets me excited about MySQL is, it's kind of a changer of view internal of what we should be doing and how we should be doing it. I spoke to the other day to one of our replication engineers, and he was talking about, part of the design that they're working on and how they had worked out the design behind an interface, so it should work to MySQL's benefit in that case, so kind of that whole modularity thing. That part had me fairly excited. I was excited to see some of the work that Heikki had done inside of NODB as far as the page compressions and so forth. It's been really neat to see what Monty's been doing with Maria, as far as him rethinking how MyISAM would be done, both from a standpoint of going from what is really a stream format to kind of a page format with the possibility of transactions and such. So I find that pretty exciting to watch.
MySQL has kind of been moving up the food chain over the last few years. The line at which you say, I need to go and use Oracle, or I need to go and use Sybase, for the people who still say that, seems to be moving up from year to year. How do you consider yourself or the product compared to the traditional big SQL databases at this point?
Well, let's see. If you're talking about big SQL databases, you know, feature-wise, so what I believe personally, so if you look at what majority of users do, is they're using SQL at about what we call the SQL 92 standard. So about 92 is your basic, you know, create table, insert, some cursor-based stuff, and so forth. There's obviously a need for stored procedure for some people, especially for more legacy-based applications. So pretty much today, you know, there's a pretty good part, you know, on par for all of the relational databases at this point for that level. There's a lot of things in 99 that either we don't support or half the other vendors don't support either. But then there was a lot that was done there that people thought would be, you know, exciting 5 years later, and it turned out to pretty much, you know, not be all that exciting.
Obviously, one of the big pieces of news for you folks in the last year or so has been the acquisition by Sun. Can you talk at all about what went into that decision and what you think the benefits are going to be and what you've seen the benefits so far of being?
So what went into the decision? Well, I heard what went into the decision was that Jonathan talked Martin into dinner, is what I heard. In fact, I think that could even be pretty easily confirmed. The good things about Sun, you know, Sun has been around for a very long time. They have some incredibly capable hardware engineers and people who are really, you know, I think a generation or two out there as far as, you know, what is being built. You know, the more of what I get to poke around Sun and see what, you know, what they're designing and hardware-wise, and it gives you kind of a view of what the future is, and that's pretty cool to actually think of when you're writing something like a database. It also means that you get an idea of, you know, where is hardware going, more than just beyond a simple concept of Moore's Law. I mean, some of the stuff is, you know, we're moving to solid-state disks, we're getting more and more cores. You know, all of that stuff you can generally guess. There's other pieces to it. And I think it just really enforces how quickly that kind of world is going to be hitting us.
Sun has been kind of all over the place lately with their open source strategies. They've open sourced Java. There were some rumors that they were going to actually close parts of MySQL, and then they didn't. Where do you guys fit into Sun's strategy?
Well, one thing to know is that it was actually never Sun had never had an interest in closed sourcing MySQL. That was actually there was kind of a pre-IPO wonder whether we should take certain features that we could, in theory, if they should be modular, they could go and sell modules. So same thing you see, like Richard does it with compression with SQLite, and you see the Postgres vendors do it. So you take certain features that are in theory modularized out and making those available only to paid customers. It's a model around open source. It's actually not one that Sun really was subscribing to for MySQL. So the announcement there had more to do with pretty much plans around what we were going to do if we had IPO'd. But in a world view of Sun, those are less desirable at this point. So it's not really a Sun thing. Probably the only thing that irritated me about the Slashdart article on it was the Sun part. Everything else I actually thought was pretty much dead on.
Sun obviously has a large investment in Java. It's been one of their crown jewels. Bringing you on board, are we going to start to see more of an integration of Java into the database or the database into Java?
MySQL is a C++ written application. There's already a Java DB out there, so I don't see much of a reason to translate it. There's been an interest around one of our engineers, in fact, a couple of our engineers, Anthony Curtis and Eric Herman, about writing a way to plug in external languages into stored procedures, something that Postgres has actually had for a while now. We've been looking, I think Anthony and Eric looked a little bit at their design, looked a little bit at what Oracle did, and have been trying to come up with something that looks pretty reasonable. That code, you can actually go and find that code off on Launchpad if you're interested in finding it. But that's bringing in not only Java, but that's bringing in, I think they already have a Lua one up, they have a Perl one up. That's bringing in many languages into the database. So really, you know, if you're going to write, if you want to have your application server built into your database, there really shouldn't be any reason to stick you with learning a language you don't want to use or a language that's not really optimized for what you're doing. The language should be whatever you want to use it as.
Turning more to the general discussion of databases, in a lot of ways it seems like there have been slow incremental improvements in the SQL standard, but pretty much the SQL you were writing, as you said earlier, 10, 15 years ago, looks a lot like the SQL that you write today. Is the underlying philosophy and architecture of databases stagnated? Is there something that really needs to happen in terms of a shift of thinking?
I think there's two things right now that are pushing the changes. They're really pushing the database world. The first thing that's going to push the you know, basic OLTP transactional database world, which you're right, that world really hasn't changed in some time now, is really a change in the number of cores and the move to solid state disks. Because a lot of the code that's been written today, or a lot of the concepts around databases, the idea that you don't have access to enough memory, your disk is slow, can't do random reads very well, and you know, you maybe have one, maybe eight processors. But if you think about yourself, like, you know, you look at some of the upper end hardware and, you know, the mini core stuff, say some of what Sun's got, you know, a lesser degree Intel's got, and you're almost looking at some kind of an array processing that you're doing because you've got access to so many processors. And, well, the whole story of trying to optimize for getting away with, you know, trying to optimize around the problem of random I.O. being expensive, well, that's not that that big of a deal when you actually have, you know, a solid-state disk. So that's one whole area, I think, that'll actually not only push, but it'll cause a rethinking in what we call, what we think of today as the standard, you know, Jim Gray relational database design. On the second side of this, which may actually be more exciting, is the issue of, instead of, you know, the structured data world of the relational database, but the semi-structured world. You look at what's being done today with CouchDB, you look at Amazon ScaleDB to a lesser extent, but to a similar extent, you, not ScaleDB, SimpleDB, to a lesser extent or a similar extent, Tokyo Cabinet. Those databases are really kind of fascinating because those databases are redefining really how we access data and how we are going to be searching and using data. So there's a whole world out there that's just starting to open up in that direction.
Another thing we're seeing is, as part of the whole platform as a service movement, you're seeing things like Force.com and Amazon S3 are kind of blurring the line between where your application lives and where your database lives, and having to keep your data close to your in-house as opposed to close to your server. Where does that play into where databases are going?
You mean as far as, you still have an issue of latency. So no matter what, you've got data sitting in something that you have to run through an application server, and there's latency issue involved in that. So that's an unsolved problem at this point, trying to make sure everything is in close proximity. The second thing, though, of your question, you know, people at this point are not wanting to deploy data centers. In fact, it's becoming rather egotistical to say you want to build out a data center. There's no reason why, you know, if you're building something new today, you're going to be building it in some kind of hosted facility, whether that be something a little more traditional on the lines of, say, a Rackspace or a Dream Hosting, up to something as non-traditional as, say, EC2 or something even like that, that's just even the application process, like, you know, what we see in Google Apps or Project Caroline. You know, that in itself is an entirely different realm. But it's certainly the you know, buying a rack of servers and keep buying racks of servers, that doesn't seem to be a great way of spending your initial capital anymore.
Where is MySQL going to fit into there?
Well, the thing we know today is MySQL is quite popular inside of the EC2. I think we're told that we're generally the most popular database ran inside there. So it kind of gives strength to MySQL's general lightweight and easy to install. I think you'll see us do more things with the technology than what we're doing today. I mean, certainly on one side of it, you can already see some of that with the proxy project and how people want to do automatic, sharding of databases. There's certainly quite a bit of that that's going on.
So how about service-oriented architectures? Does that put any new demands or different demands onto database users?
I think it does. It actually removes some demands. It removes some of the demands of, do you mean by in use of them or in trying to create them?
I think in both, because you've got, as a consumer of it, it kind of changes your data model. And as a creator of it, you have to think in different ways about how you want to gather your data.
Yeah, I mean, in the user of it, I mean, if we look at say, how WriteScale works today, or there's a few other vendors that have started popping up in that case, or even a ScaleDB, you're off pushing the cost of management of the database to another, to some other vendor to handle for you, which means that you deal with whatever their latency issues are, whatever their growth issues are. But you get to walk away from that problem, and that's something that's pretty sexy to a lot of people. As far as building out architectures today, I think that's, it goes back to the reason why we see proxies and stuff being talked about. Very few application environments today do you have something which is really not an object relational model that's being mapped back into a standard relational database. Because of that ORM, though, that means that you can do all kinds of little nifty things, like it makes sharding very easy because you've got objects you're moving around. I was introduced recently to a database called ZopeDB, which has it's for a Python specific that allows either people to store natively inside of the inside of its own structures, or it can then use MySQL to store its data. So that's kind of that kind of stuff's pretty fascinating to see.
Looking forward, what do you see the big challenges for database vendors and database users being over the next, say, 5 or 10 years?
I think on the database, the hard things we have in front of us is that I don't think anybody's built today to handle the number of cores that are going to be thrown at us in the next decade. I think we are all still scrambling for a design that'll actually work. I think in that scramble to find a design that works in that environment, it's going to open up the playing field for new databases to actually show up. So it's kind of one of the first times in a while that there might be a good chance that somebody else could build a new database from scratch. Same thing goes with solid state disks. All the designs that we see today are pretty much optimized around solid state disks. There are very, very rare exceptions to that. So to me, that's something that is going to be a challenge for all the for anybody writing a database today. As far as users go, I think that the number of different technologies coming out really kind of opens up. It really opens up the world of what they can actually make use of. It's not just a database today. You can have anything from your you have structured data to unstructured data to semi-structured data. So for your unstructured data, what are you going to pick out there to use? Are you going to go down to the level of something like an Isilon to store data? Or are you going to move up to a Mogal FS? Are you going to push that out to like an S3 and have somebody else handle it? The semi-structured stuff is still so new that I don't think we have a clear destiny at this point. And on the structured side, it's going to be finding the right database that matches the hardware that you're buying today.
To finish up, you're going to be speaking at OSCON this summer. Do you want to give us a little bit of a preview of what you're planning to be talking about?
Well, at the moment, I know I'm confirmed on at least one thing. There's at least two other things I'm unconfirmed on, so I'll talk about the confirmed thing. The confirmed thing I'm talking about is myself and Dormando, who's another co-writer on a project called Memcached. We're going to be doing a tutorial, I think, on the first day of the tutorial sessions for OSCON, and presenting for about 3 or so hours on all the internals and how to work with Memcached, when not to use Memcached, a number of different architectures and use cases that you can use with it. So that'll be pretty exciting. We've actually made a, if you Google for it, you can find a PhD study, which is a PDF we have put together, because we're trying to get more people interested in that technology, but also kind of understanding where and when to actually deploy it, and even when not to deploy it. So that's the main thing. I also hear that we will be doing something at the conference on the issues around creating crippleware versus open source, namely how can you take an open source project, make sure that it's open source, but still allow people to extend it in both open source and proprietary ways, but in some manner that, you know, doesn't, you don't end up with some crippleware application.
All right, well, it's been great talking to you, Brian.
Hey, it's been great talking to you as well.
We've been talking with Brian Aker, Director of Technology for MySQL, and you can see Brian this summer at OSCON in Portland.